you like Hamilton? Because we do. I hate myself. No. Hamilton today.
She did the thing. That's awesome.
We're going to figure out what's true and what's not, thanks to our friend Screen Rant on Google. We have a couple different articles pulled up. Oh, you don't even have one by Screen Rant, so that's awkward.
That's fine.
But yeah, we're going to go over what the musical got right and what they got wrong. Mostly what it's got wrong, but, you know.
She's negative like that.
This guy.
Do you want to start it?
Sure, I'll start it off because I have more. In the second song of Hamilton, called Aaron Burr, Sir, Hamilton meets three people named Aaron Burr, John Lawrence, and Mulligan. What's his first name? Do we know?
Probably. I don't remember what it is.
Oh, and Lafayette. But that's not true. They don't know when Burr met Hamilton, but they probably shared social and academic circles before the war. John Lawrence met Hamilton in 1777 after the war had started because he did not leave France. Wait. Oh, and Lafayette did not leave France until 1777, so he also could not have met Hamilton until then. But Mulligan probably met him in 1773 after being introduced to him by his brother Hugh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Not Hugh Jackman.
No, but Mulligan actually helped Hamilton enroll in grammar school, provided him with housing, and helped to stoke the flames of his revolutionary spirit, as it says.
Dang. Screen Rant. That's pretty good.
That's pretty interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, you're
cool. So here, this is from worldtreasures.org, for what it's worth. The first thing says, something true. Alexander Hamilton's childhood and young life that was depicted in the musical was true. Alexander Hamilton was born in Charlestown, Navis? Do you know how to say that? Nevis?
Nevis.
In the Western Indies, his mother, Rachel Fawcett, was married to another man prior to meeting Hamilton's father, but following her divorce, the court prohibited her to remarry. Therefore, Alexander Hamilton was born out of wedlock in the Caribbean. Before becoming a teenager, both Hamilton's mother and father passed away, leaving him as an orphan. In 1772, a hurricane devastated the West Indies, and by 1773, Hamilton began university. Only lasting a year and a half at the school, he headed to America, where he began to fight for America's freedom.
That's interesting. I read a different article about his mom, and it said that her and her first husband never actually got a divorce. And so that's why she couldn't get remarried. I don't know which is true, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she couldn't get remarried, so Hamilton's father was not married to his mother.
Yeah, I guess it was it's hard to know, I think.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, Schuyler sisters. In the song, the Schuyler sisters, they are portrayed as feminists, but it says that there's no actual evidence that presented them as it says the sisters are presented as feminist figures voicing dissatisfaction over the unequal treatment of women. However, while all of Philip Schuyler's daughters were well educated and extremely articulate, there's no evidence that such progressive opinions were voiced, especially when considering how rare it was for women at the time to be welcome into discussions of politics. So they could have been, like, woohoo, go women, but it also could have just been that they were educated in areas that they were allowed to be educated in.
Makes sense.
And in the song Satisfied, Angelica says that her father had no sons. But that's not true, because Philip and his wife Catherine actually had three sons, John, Jeremiah, and Renslayer.
Wow.
That's a weird name.
Renslayer.
And I read in a different article that he has seven kids total, so, yeah. Angelica was lying that she had a lot of pressure to marry wealthy, because she didn't. But That is okay.
Oh, Renslayer, not Renslayer.
Renslayer.
Sailor. Okay.
Sailor. I don't know how to say it. It's
amazing. Interesting. I thought it was like the name of that lady that on Loki, Renslayer.
Renslayer. That'd be interesting. Oh, don't want to do that.
Dang, that's pretty good. Here I've got two falses back to back. So the first one says Alexander Hamilton never punched the bursar. It sounded pretty good in the song, though, is what it says. Additionally, Lafayette did not arrive in America from France until 1777, which is the same year that Hamilton met him and John Lawrence. So it's kind of like what you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
It's possible that he knew Hercules Mulligan earlier due to the fact that they both went to university. Went to university around the same time. And New York City fell to British control early on in the war, so Hamilton did not return to the city until after independence.
I think it said that on this one, too.
Yeah, so that one's all kind of the same. And then the other false thing it says, the musical Hamilton is portrayed as someone who strongly identifies with his immigrant background and outwardly opposes slavery. And it says, unfortunately, this aspect of the narrative is not only historically accurate, while Hamilton opposed slavery more than many of his colleagues, he did not outwardly express this because of the fear of a divided country. And so it says the best part about Hamilton is seeing such a diverse cast play historical figures. So that is something good about it. And while Hamilton himself was complicit to slavery in real life, Lin-Manuel Miranda does not shy away from using his artistic freedom to reimagine these historical figures as people of color, making Hamilton a groundbreaking musical. So making the cast the way it was kind of paints a picture of diversity in the country rather than some of the ways that they were near the beginning.
I like that. Yeah, I like that the musical kind of shows an empowerment from Hamilton, from like, oh, he had this really bad background, and he's an immigrant, and he kind of gets to voice that slavery is wrong. But obviously it would be a lot harder to do back then than was shown in the musical. But I like that he did that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get back to where I was. There's a quote from Angelica. To Eliza that says, if you were as generous as the old Romans, you would lend me him for a little while.
Wow.
So basically, the love triangle between Alexander, Angelica, and Eliza was maybe more than a legend. Because it says that there were mutual flirtatious banter and unearthed letters, such as one from Angelica to her sister Eliza, in which she jokingly stated that if she was generous, then she would share him. But in fact, the real Angelica had been married to John Baker Church for a few years by the time Alexander and Eliza got married. Known for her intelligence and independence, the eldest Schuyler sister eloped.
Did you say imploded?
I did in fact say imploded. eloped with the English-born businessman, who interestingly had his own duel with Aaron Burr in 1799. Neither man was injured, against the wishes of her father. Angelica also kept up a flirtatious correspondence with one of Hamilton's primary antagonists on the show, Thomas Jefferson.
Interesting.
So she was just the flirt with every man she knows, every kind of gal.
Hmm. Interesting.
It is weird that two of the people that she flirted with ended up in a duel with Aaron Burr, though.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a sign.
John Baker Church did it the best way. Neither of them were hurt, whereas Hamilton just died, so. R.I.P.
That's how it goes. Okay, so one I have, it says it's true, kind of. So King George was in fact mad, but the reason why is more complicated, which I did hear this before. Mental illness possibly played a part in his madness, but many historians believe that he went mad due to debilitating metabolic condition known as porphyria?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I don't know how to say it. A disease that directly affects the nervous system and brain. While this disease can be treated easily today with the proper medical attention, back in the 18th century, doctors had no idea how to treat the king, so doctors gave him medication, that's how you say that word, likely laced with poison, making his illness and fits of madness worse. He did not suffer from this madness until after being defeated in the American Revolution, but will remain in history as the Mad King who lost the American colonies.
That's really interesting, because there's a Bridgerton like spinoff series called Queen Charlotte, and it talks about like his mental illness when they first get married. It's really sad, actually. Like, it's
depressing.
But yeah, it did talk about how the doctors, like, their treatments didn't necessarily work the way that they thought it would, and it didn't end up making it worse. It was really sad. But that's interesting. That's really interesting. As presented in the show, Hamilton and George Washington. Oh, hold on. Just kidding. George Washington is the most formative relationships in Alexander's wife. Life. I need to learn how to read. That was rough. Oh, anyway, gosh. In Alexander's life, not in his wife.
Oh my gosh.
Can you cut that later?
Nope.
Dang it.
Probably I'm going to forget, so I'm just not going to commit to it.
All right. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
While the meeting in the musical is presumably meant to take place in 1776, just outside of New York City, it is more likely that Hamilton became an aide to Washington in 1777, the following year, in Morristown, New Jersey. Woot woot. New Jersey. Crazy. While Hamilton's tactical brilliance is celebrated by Lafayette in the song Guns and Ships, the truth is that Hamilton's contributions to the battlefield and the tide of the war are largely exaggerated for the musical. Although the show later shows a Washington desperate for Hamilton's return to the war, the truth is that Hamilton frequently pestered Washington for a leadership position over a body of soldiers, making ultimatums until he finally got his way in 1781. That's crazy.
Hmm. Yeah.
He's like, don't worry, I'll go on strike for a minute.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Okay. So my next one is what you were already talking about with the Schuyler sisters, so I'll just skip that one.
Okay.
So the next one, it talks about, it's true, it says New York City was, in fact, the first country's capital, and so on September 13th, 1788, New York City was established as America's first capital under the Constitution of the United States, and since 1788, New York was the host of the nation's legislature and had been the de facto capital. Due to financial concerns and disagreements across the board, New York did not last long as a capital. On August 12, 1790, Congress met a final time in New York before relocating to Philadelphia and later to Washington, D.C.
Crazy.
So, you're saying, like, yep.
New York City was a capital.
Mm-hmm.
The first capital.
The first one.
Next one talks about the Lorenz and Lee duel. The musical depicts the duel, the first of several that pop up in Hamilton's life, featuring Aaron Burr as Lee's second. This is impossible, as Burr was hundreds of miles away in West Point, New York, recovering from poor health. Instead, Lee's second for the duel was Major Evan Edwards, a Philadelphia-born military man who reportedly given land in Virginia by Lee after his retirement. The music presents America's first commander-in-chief as a man very much above politics and infighting. The real Washington was actually quite sensitive to the mutterings of the men ranked below him as it pertained to his character. He was absent from the duel and seemingly not terribly upset by it. Days later, he and his wife Martha hosted John Lawrence for Christmas dinner.
Hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All because a guy had negative comments about Washington.
Hmm.
That's wild.
Dang, guess that's how it goes.
Oh, and this next one kind of talked about Hamilton's stance on slavery, so I guess I'll just read this one real quick. It says that while it is true that Hamilton is among the founding fathers most opposed to slavery, he often sacrificed those beliefs in the name of political expediency.
Hmm.
And there's a quote that says, his marriage to Elizabeth Schuyler is particularly telling, seeing as she belonged to a very wealthy slave owning family who had 27 enslaved people in their service.
Hmm, dang.
That's crazy.
It is.
That's a lot of people.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, Hamilton was directly involved in the purchase of slaves on behalf of his father-in-law.
Oh.
And in 1784, assisted Angelica in her search for a slave previously in her service.
Dang. Jeez.
That's crazy.
And Hamilton was also in favor of the Three-Fifths Compromise.
Yeah. That's wild. Huh. Anyway.
Dang. Jeez. All right, my next one is about the song One Last Time, which is like Washington's farewell address to the country, in which he tells Hamilton that he's stepping down, he's not going to run for president after his second term, and is kind of this big deal. And so we find out here that this does literally quote Washington's farewell address, which Hamilton did help write. And so if you haven't, you should go listen to One Last Time, because it is there's some really good words.
Yeah.
So this was published in 1792, and his farewell address was actually a 32-page announcement that Washington would not run for a third term as president. And he warned the United States of the rise of political parties and sectionalism, stating that these would be a threat to national unity. He also advised the young country to not form long-term alliances with other nations. Washington's farewell address is still relevant today. During the Civil War, the U.S. Senate began a tradition of reading Washington's farewell address on his birthday annually.
That's crazy. Can you imagine having to sit down and read 32 pages every single year? I don't know about you guys. I love reading, but that much? That's crazy. Like, yeah. How many people do you think read his farewell address? Because I'm sure, like, he was a really respected guy. And I knew that a lot of the song came from him directly, but I didn't know that Hamilton helped write it.
Yeah.
But, like, how many people do you think have read that? Like, he was their first president, their only president that they had known in this new country. He led them to battle. He was, a really good figure in the economy.
Right.
In the society. That's the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
But that's 32 pages, guys.
Yeah. And I just looked it up. It is just available. Like, if you Google it, it brings you to the senate.gov, and it just has the whole document. Yeah, it's still kind of loading, but yeah, it's just there, so you can actually
go read it.
So when that gets a chance, maybe I'll look at it a bit. But
that's great.
Yeah.
All right, my next point talks about Hamilton's characterization of Thomas Jefferson. The show creators take great liberties with Jefferson's character. He's presented as a sharp-tongued, flamboyant, and confrontational figure, prone to political infighting. One could argue that in terms of Hamilton's antagonists in the show, Jefferson could be ranked as one of his greatest rivals, second to only Burr. But Jefferson was actually a fairly quiet and thoughtful founding father who confronted political obstacles with sensitivity and careful thought rather than head-on and aggressively. There were several instances in which Hamilton and Jefferson agreed, especially during the first years of their appointment to Secretary of Treasury and Secretary of State positions, respectively. Jefferson even advocated Hamilton's nomination for the American Philosophical Society, a prestigious organization made up of the most prolific scholars of the day. Despite this, the only glances we see of Jefferson are adversarial, surely in order to create additional dramatic tension for the hero of the story. As David Diggs, the guy who plays Jefferson, says in a piece published in The Time where he discusses Jefferson's legacy, oh my gosh, learn how to speak. History is about who tells it, and I feel like I've been given this opportunity to reimagine and retell the story.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Wise words.
Yeah. I was going back really quick. I did the thing did load for Washington's
Okay, to be fair, address. There, I thought this was going to be 8-point font.
Well, no, yeah. Space. It's not like you're it's like
but it's pretty even out.
Yeah.
It's not too bad.
It looks like there's
yeah.
what like a 2-page introduction and it's yeah. really just about 26 pages. Like
yeah, it's really
the whole PDF's a bit longer, but yeah, then
and it's like one of those ones where the pages were only half of the page.
Yeah.
So the words are not very.
I don't think it would take too long to read.
I don't think it would.
But it literally does end with the quote that's in the song. I anticipate with pleasing expectation the retreat in which I promised myself to realize the sweet enjoyment of partaking and so on. And it's like you can see it literally is just him.
That's a banger song.
It is. It is pretty good.
It's a great song.
Yeah. So with that, I'll go to my next one, which it says it's false. Unlike the musical, Alexander Hamilton resigned during George Washington's presidency rather than being fired by John Adams. Although it is true that Adams and Hamilton did not have a good relationship. Adams and Hamilton did not have a good relationship. On the contrary, John Adams was not a fan of Alexander Hamilton and oftentimes voiced his disdain toward him. At one point, John Adams calls Hamilton the brat bastard of a Scotch peddler. Wow. And in retaliation, Hamilton published a pamphlet outlining all of the reasons why John Adams should not be reelected for a second term. Hamilton's pamphlet, along with the failed Alien and Sedition Acts that Hamilton signed into law in 1797.
Adams signed into law.
What did I say?
You said Hamilton.
Oh, my bad. resulted in John Adams losing the election of 1800 against Thomas Jefferson by a landslide. Side note, the election of 1800 was accurately shown in the musical with only a few parts exaggerated.
Well, that's good. I think that's, yeah. Because, okay, so Screen Rant has, like, a ton of articles about this. And one of them is specifically about the relationship that Hamilton has with John Adams. Like, there's a whole article just dedicated to that.
Yeah.
And I think that's crazy. Like, how much can you hate a person to have the whole article just be about how much you guys hate each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's crazy. My next point talks about Mariah Reynolds and the Reynolds pamphlet. The audience only sees Mariah for a relatively short amount of stage time, but the picture is painted of a woman who has developed some feelings for the founding father. She's even included in the "We Love Him" line in the opening number, also shared by Eliza and Angelica. The perspective and motivations for the affair are sadly lost to history. Some historians believe that she aided her husband James Reynolds in a scheme that helped him to profit from Hamilton, seducing him anew in letters and keeping the affair and the blackmail money alive. Whether she was an active participant or a manipulated victim is also uncertain. While the affair takes place in New York City during the summer of 1791, Mariah first visited Hamilton while they were both residing in Philadelphia. The musical spends no time on the aftermath of the pamphlet's publication as it pertains to Mariah, who, after Hamilton depicts himself as the sole victim of a blackmail scheme, was subjected to public humiliation, ultimately resulting in her divorce from James Reynolds and eventual life as a remarried and proclaimed a religious woman. That's crazy.
Yeah. Dang.
That's kind of, yeah, that's wild.
All right, so I think this one is kind of related to what you were talking about with Jefferson's portrayal. It just says that ultimately Jefferson was very opposite to how he was depicted in the musical. So rather than being eccentric and combative, Jefferson was known for his quietness, sensitivity, and careful thought when it comes to political decisions. And additionally, he was not much of an enemy of Hamilton's as he was portrayed in the show. There were many times Jefferson agreed and supported Hamilton and vice versa. Jefferson was a main advocate for Hamilton's nomination, like you had said. So ultimately, the musical just exaggerated the aspect of history, which made for a great show. So there wasn't really much there.
My next one kind of talks about what you said about John Adams. It says that John Adams was an incredibly important figure in Hamilton's career. Despite their obvious feelings towards each other, Adams did not fire Hamilton, as the musical asserts. He resigned 2 years before Adams' ascension to the office. And then there's that pamphlet he released. And there's the clickbait for the article about why Hamilton mocks President John Adams. Anyway, Aaron Burr in The Legendary Duel, quote, "Hamilton, a show so preoccupied with themes of history and legacy, goes out of its way to paint a picture of a man and a time that is often at odds with reality." The musical omits the Hamilton-Burr relationship certainly to draw connections and parallels between the two men as they march toward the duel of legend, which the audience witnesses in Hamilton's final minutes. While grievances were certainly numerous, much of the tension between them manifested itself late in Hamilton's life. The musical alludes to Hamilton's refusal to endorse Burr during the presidential election of 1800 as the primary catalyst for their duel in Weehawken, New Jersey. However, the details and involvement surrounding Hamilton and the election results are different according to history. By 1800, Hamilton's political influence had waned, and his endorsement was not likely to swing the election one way or the other. My dad pointed that out, actually. I was just listening to it one day, and he's like, Hamilton really didn't have that much of a an influence.
Yeah, that's what I heard in my
class here. They make it seem like it's such a big thing, but it's really not.
Yeah, it was just something, one of those things that was, like, exaggerated again.
The primary conflict for the 1804 duel came in the form of Burr's gubernatorial race, yes. Where Hamilton worked to undermine him, motivated by mutterings of New England desiring to leave the Union. Many of the New England senators, upset with policies laid out by the Jefferson administration, looked to Burr as an advocate for their desired success. However, one cannot judge Miranda and the creators too harshly, considering Hamilton's eventful life, nor the nearly 800-page tome by Ron Chernow, which serves as the musical's primary source. So, nobody can be blamed for this. It's everybody's fault. Such changes led to a more engaging, fleshed-out characters, a tighter narrative, and some of Hamilton's most iconic moments. Just why these changes and decisions were made will remain unclear for everyone except for those who were in the room where they happened.
Wow, dang. Ba-dum-tsh. That was a good one.
And that's the end of that one.
Yeah, I think that is true. How a lot of these changes weren't just to make it wrong. Like, it made for a better story. And I think it made more sense in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
It
made this musical what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, think about this.
I'm thinking.
Hamilton, played by Lin-Manuel Miranda himself. And Jefferson probably wouldn't be played by David Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
They're just sitting there, like, having a normal conversation about politics. Nobody wants to watch that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to listen to songs about that.
Right.
I think Lin-Manuel Miranda took a lot of creative liberty, and I think he had the right to do that to make Hamilton the musical what it is.
Yeah, and I think he's choosing to send different kind of messages. Like, the musical was focused on that sort of diversity, and it also focused on the idea of legacy. Like, that's what he really wanted it to be about. It wasn't like Hamilton was the main character in that and how he portrayed that, but that wasn't really what the point of the show was. So I think when we look at, like, how a lot of these said, like, this was kind of true, but it was like exaggerated. Yeah. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda saying that's not the point of the story, it was just to show you how important those other things are, which are like diversity, legacy, and history.
Right. And I think he not only did that for Hamilton, but also side characters like Eliza Schuyler and Angelica Schuyler, and even like Jefferson and Washington. And I guess Washington's more of a main character, let's be honest.
Yeah, but
They showed different aspects of those characters that we wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Right.
And I think he did a great job with that.
Yeah, because I think before, because Hamilton came out 2015, 16, I think. No, that's the movie, not the musical.
Okay. I was like, released today. It was 2020.
It was around that time. So I think before then, a lot of people didn't know a lot of things about Hamilton. Like, I think they knew about him, but these kind of brought more attention to him and the other founding fathers and things
August
like
6th, 2015.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, it was the official opening night.
Yeah, so I think it plays a really cool role in that way.
It's great. The music is diverse, the people are diverse. I think it was a really well-done musical.
Yeah. Before we go, I think there's one more thing. There's one more thing I just want to look at really quick. Oh, dang, Hamilton really was wearing his glasses. That's just pretty crazy.
It hasn't even loaded yet.
That says it right there.
I'm going to call you out in 4K right here.
What do you mean? It says right there.
Well, now it's loaded. That's crazy. It really does tell you to look it up in the song, but
No, what's the other one?
Hamilton took his glasses out of his pocket and put them on before firing his pistol. So they literally had to, like, pause, wait, go, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's true.
It delayed the duel. He may have been using convex lenses for reading and writing.
I well.
And he could have been using his glasses to see the front side
this,
of the pistol.
This is
more
the
clearly.
AI overview that's just pulling from a bunch of websites. People like this is probably pulling from this Reddit page right here where people don't know what they're talking about. So,
probably.
Yeah. Anyway, that was what we had from a couple of different articles. Some of the things that Hamilton got right, what it got wrong, what it exaggerated,
yeah.
Things like that.
It was fun. I hope you guys liked it.
If you didn't, it was Camden's fault.
It is my fault. We might go over the songs next week. So, you know, there's a random article that ranked them for us, so we'll see if we agree or not. We like to disagree. It's good. It's healthy.
It sure is. It's maybe. What?
Did you not see that ad?
No, it's fine. Okay, that's a wrap.
Scamper Badgers. See you next time.